I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. There's been a dramatic increase in the use of surveillance technology on the job, especially since the pandemic when so many people began working from home and their employers wanted to monitor their work habits and gauge productivity. We're talking about tracking time spent on the computer, things like logging keystrokes or monitoring apps and email activity, and the use of websites or grabbing screenshots using facial recognition and even recording video and sound using webcams. It's been dubbed bossware or tattleware. And while more workers are required to go back to the office, the use of this software looks like it's here to stay. It's big business and it's largely legal. Today on Radio Times, what you need to know about how your boss is monitoring you and how to protect yourself. And we have a guest who has joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. J.S. Nelson is visiting researcher at Harvard Law School Program on Negotiation, co-author of a book titled Business Ethics, What Everyone Needs to Know, and she's currently writing a book on worker surveillance. And J.S. Nelson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's my great pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, we want to make sure that you can join our conversation. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We were talking about before going on the air that employers, bosses, slave owners.
We have to explain that connection.
Yes, Marty. Yeah. But there's nothing unusual about someone's boss or supervisor wanting to know what you are doing when you are supposed to be working.
Yeah. So as long as people have delegated tasks to other people, there's been an issue of how you supervise that task, how you make sure that whatever you ask them to do actually gets done. Mm-hmm. And there's been a long history of how that's developed over time. And surveillance sits in that context, and we can talk more about that. But there are legitimate reasons for wanting to follow up on, you know, whoever you've delegated and the tasks that you've asked them to do. But then there are a lot of ways in which these tools, this technology is being used that people aren't thinking about, and they're not considering what the impact of it is. And they actually may be counterproductive for getting the work done the way that they want it to be done.
Absolutely. And let's jump from history to today. And I'm wondering about the effect of the pandemic, the fact that not everybody, but a lot of people were working from home, whether that kind of jump-started this use of surveillance.
It was there before, but certainly soon after the shutdowns happened, at least in the U.S. in March 2020, within a couple of weeks, we saw the sales of workplace surveillance software more than triple. Wow. And they have just skyrocketed since. And as you point out, it is an industry. People sell software for this purpose. It is in their interest to make money out of it. They often have sales tactics where they either appeal to managers and saying, you know, this is a method by which, you know, you can control and re-exert control over all these people who are now working in all these places where you can't see them, right? Because there was a lot of fear that happened for companies when they had to react to the pandemic and didn't know where their people were and how to manage or supervise them.
And that's legitimate. I mean, to some extent, one can understand when your workforce, and we're talking about, I guess, people largely working on computers, right? But when your workforce is forced to work from home, you know, are they getting the work done?
Well, so this is an interesting issue because, first of all, let's just flag that it was the very privileged about 45% of the population that was able to work from home. So we're not, you know, but workplace surveillance increased for everyone. It increased for frontline workers as well. It increased for essential employees. It increased for everyone. And so it does seem to have been motivated by fear. I will also say that and here's a very important point. It was also a cover often for very poor management. If you're not talking to your employees and not finding out what they're actually doing and instead relying on a dashboard where flags would come up because some computer algorithm sees something and then we've got to talk about all of the bias and other problems that are built into algorithms. But it became a crutch for many managers, and it became it actually repelled a lot of people who were working very hard and also struggling during a time of great transition to give their best to the manager. In fact, we saw during the beginning of the pandemic, we saw in the United States that the average white collar worker's day expanded by 3 hours a day, more than anywhere else in the world. So people were putting their all in. People were doing this under extraordinary circumstances, dealing with childcare, dealing with other caregiving responsibilities, dealing with, complete upheavals of their lives as well. And so it was a real slap in the face often for workers who had given above and beyond in those conditions to find out that this was the way that they were being treated. And the very strong message was, we don't trust you. We don't appreciate what you put forward. So,
well, and just to underscore what you said, I mean, productivity, I'm not sure if it was across the board, but productivity generally went up during the pandemic.
Exactly. And it wasn't because of the surveillance software. It was really because people saw themselves as trying to do the best they could under these circumstances. And so for management to react this way and then not manage well, right? Not appreciate that extra effort and everything that their workers were doing, but instead send the very strong message that we don't trust you. We're going to surveil you. We're going to invade your home, because remember that this workplace surveillance software, it can take pictures of you every 5 to 10 minutes, often through your computer. It can listen through your microphone to the things that are happening. It, logs your keystrokes. It, some of the tattleware live streams you to everyone else in the company at all times. So this was really invasive, especially when you're talking about people now working not just in their perhaps kitchens and living rooms, but in their bedrooms with their spouses and their significant others and all these other pieces of what was getting picked up and what was being surveilled. Really important to talk about.
Indeed. And the sort of the morphing of sort of work and family life that happened where, maybe you'd work for a couple of hours, but then you've got some homework things to take care of and maybe dinner to get taken care of. And then you're back at 7 or 8 o'clock at night back on the computer, that there wasn't a sort of 9 to 5 designation.
Right. We saw all these boundaries start to break down, and they've been breaking down for quite a while, but you see boundaries of literally physical space, right? You're not clocking in and clocking out of a factory floor where you understood that that's where the borders of surveillance would begin and end reasonably, right?
Right.
You're also talking about boundaries of time being broken down. You could be on email at 2 a.m. In fact, bosses were increasingly asking for that, right? With teams working in time zones, around the world and trying to deal with crises and big projects. And then, of course, there's also this breaking down of what is relevant for someone who is your boss for your identity as a worker. I mean, should they know, via what's happening and in your home, about, medical issues. We've heard stories about the microphones being used with the software to pick up keywords. So if, you had a niece or a daughter announce that they were pregnant, would you then be fired because the word pregnancy came up in so when you're siphoning up so much information about people and then running it through these algorithms and the artificial intelligence and or actually listening to conversations, you're going to overhear all kinds of things. And there's really a question of where are the boundaries of what's relevant to somebody's work product and work productivity and what's really just invasive.
Sure.
And experienced as invasive.
Well, let me ask you some basic questions. You talk about counting keystrokes or perhaps even mouse clicks. I mean, how literally is that happening? And can we assume if our bosses or our work gives us our technology to use, that they have access to however we use that technology?
So this is really interesting because there isn't good law on this. And certainly at the federal level, the law is very amorphous, and it seems to be that as long as you're given some kind of notice that you're being monitored, and it can be a line in a handbook that nobody reads, they don't have to describe what it is that they're doing. But there's also this issue of what, you know, what can be described as monitoring is actually surveillance. There's very little difference between those two things. And as we're talking about these, people just don't understand how all-encompassing this is. So, yes, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, which is the general standard here, in your workplace computer, in your workplace area.
It doesn't belong to us.
It doesn't belong to us, right? So don't. So you can assume that your email is being read, right? And you assume, especially in the financial sector, where you have to turn in your personal devices and they put employer software on them, that they are reading your social media and your texts and the rest of it, if you're even allowed to text and use those other pieces. But it's much more pervasive than that. We now think, because of the skyrocketing sales of this workplace surveillance software, that if you work – we used to say if you work for a company of more than 1,000 employees, you should just presume that you're being surveilled. If you work – now we say at least 500 people, you should presume that you're surveilled. But it's actually even more pervasive than that. Small businesses, restaurants are using this software. You know, we're seeing an astronomical explosion of it. And so, as someone who works for someone else, you know, we're seeing this actually all across the gig economy. So I don't even want to use the word, you know, employer and employee, but across the gig economy, the amount of tracking that is happening, say through the Lyft and the Uber apps, you know. All kinds of information is being picked up, and it's not just, you know, where a driver is and what they're doing, but you know, pieces of information that get siphoned up in this whole relationship. There are very few boundaries on it, so it's really a whole question for people who work for other people. And you notice I'd be careful there to think about what can that device see, what can that device mm-hmm. know, and what. What am I feeding to this person who's my manager and then up the chain? And the fact that it's so anonymous and that it's so – that, you know, this gets – it's an enormous amount of data that's just being, you know, collected. And you never know how it's being used. And sure. The really frightening part of it is despite good intentions at the beginning of this process – and we can talk about that because there were a lot of ideas that – oh, well, if we just manage, we're better able to see the statistics on who's producing what where, that this actually would have a beneficial impact for employees, right, or people who work for us. So, for example...
Well, you know what? Hold on. Yeah. We have to take a very short break. They're playing our song, and that is J.S. Nelson. She's a visiting researcher at the Harvard Law School Program on Negotiation. We are talking about business surveillance, the fact that it exists, it's ubiquitous, and we're going to take a very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the rise of workplace surveillance technologies, what is being tracked, how we're being tracked, whether it's productive, and how employees can protect their privacy. And again, our guests are J.S. Nelson, visiting researcher at the Harvard Law School, and also co-author of a book called Business Ethics, What Everyone Needs to Know. She's also working on a book on workplace surveillance. And you can join us. Send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I was looking at some of these companies that track email at work, and their message is that how much time you spend on email, how quickly you respond to emails that come in, that how you manage your email is a good predictor of how well you're doing your job. And I just wanted to toss that at you because that might be true for some jobs, but it seems that there's so many other jobs where, yes, email is a part of it, but it's not the totality of what someone does at work. So tracking email gives you a snapshot, but not the full picture of someone's work productivity.
That's a theme through a lot of these issues. So as we start to talk about, originally these ideas of measuring people's productivity, right, it had a positive goal. And especially if you're thinking about a multinational company or someplace else where you may have offices that are very far from headquarters, it could have had a really positive effect because it could have helped, issues of discrimination and inequality, because suddenly you see that the people in Australia, for example, are working really hard and maybe they don't have the same face time with the people in headquarters, but they could be rewarded for their work. Somehow, though, technology is a tool. It's just neutral. It's all about how we use it. Mm-hmm. And just because we can do certain things, we haven't thought through how we should do them. And so as we started developing these programs and these metrics, the irony is that we change the nature of work as well. And so if you start measuring, for example, email as a metric, you will get more email. Will you get productivity? Possibly not. In fact, what we're seeing is a very disconcerting effect where you're getting exactly the opposite of what you want. So if you're, for example, measuring, response time to email, well, then you're getting somebody sitting there at their desk, waiting for the next email to come in instead of doing maybe the large project that you asked them to do. We're also seeing, when you measure keystrokes and you measure mouse movement, we're seeing employees just slacking each other constantly or otherwise trying to create busy work and presence. Because
gaming the system in a way?
No, because that's what you've told. That's what you're measuring, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's not gaming the system. That is the system that you've created and that you told them that you're going to measure. So this is a very dangerous thing because, some people, you may have heard the expression, you can't manage what you can't measure. That's actually a misquoting of Peter Drucker, who was the father of modern management. And what he said in context was actually, you've got to measure some things, but there are a lot of things that you can't measure that you have to manage. So thinking about loyalty, team cohesion, innovation, all these other metrics, right? You have to be in touch with people and have to know what's happening. And you may not be able to measure that in terms of keystrokes and everything else, but it's certainly very important to the health of your company and to the productivity of your team. And unfortunately, if you spend all this time on these metrics and you emphasize the metrics, that's what you're going to get. And you're not going to realize that all these other qualities are gone until people start quitting in droves. And that's what we've also seen.
Oh, well, that's interesting. And when you talk about surveillance, are we literally talking about someone whose job it is to monitor what we do? Or is it collecting all this data and then going through the data and then determining whether this person is productive and that person is not?
It depends. So certainly in the financial sector, there are compliance officers whose job it is to listen to phone calls all day. Right?
Wow.
That's what they do. So there you actually have a person. Now, you almost always, because of the sheer amount of data that's being collected, have some artificial intelligence involved. And anytime we talk about artificial intelligence and we talk about algorithms, we have to think about prejudice and bias in algorithms. Right. Algorithms are only as good as the people who program them and only as good as the assumptions upon which they're based. So what we're seeing is actually, we started this conversation by saying there was a very hopeful idea about productivity and being able to better reward people on the basis of merit in the beginning. And what we're actually seeing, how much this technology is being used, is that it's just replicating the same biases and same problems that we see elsewhere. And in fact, and this is a very important point for managers to hear, for companies to hear, workplace surveillance is experienced as disproportionately invasive by your star performers, your star performers leave, and also by exactly the people who you want to keep in your company for diversity, equity, and inclusion issues. So women, minorities, LGBTQ, I mean, for all kinds of reasons, this changes how they feel about the person that they work for, and they will leave, and they leave at astonishingly high rates. And so you spent all this time recruiting diversity because there's a lot of data to show that diversity helps with innovation and productivity and all these other pieces of a strong company and, you know, letting you invent into the future. And those are the people that you're losing through this fastest.
Well, and it has a kind of big brother feel to it, right? Someone watching over your every moment. I want to pick up on something about bias and facial recognition, that's a real problem.
The enormous
facial recognition often either misinterprets or completely misses if someone is darker complected, for instance.
Well, so in some jobs, you actually have facial recognition software that you have to use. So, for example, very commonly in lawyers' jobs, when they're doing discovery work, they have to keep their webcams on so that the computer can say that it's you personally with access to these documents. But it was fascinating because there's a lot of new technology that will actually read emotions in that facial recognition.
That's scary.
Well, and so the question is how well this works. And it doesn't work. There you really have an enormous area for bias because people express emotions differently. There are a lot of cultural issues, especially if you're rolling this out around the world. There was a major backlash because Zoom, for example, and the world went to Zoom and other video conferencing and long-distance meeting programs, especially with the pandemic and work from home, that Zoom was going to create an engagement feature on its meeting software so that it would watch how often you were engaged. Well, this, different people have different ways of being engaged, right? So you could, somebody who, their eye level is at a different point in their computer monitor could be dinged for that.
And literally
by this
looking
computer,
at eye
literally
contact.
All kinds of stuff. I mean, so it, the devil is in the details of how you do this. And it's funny as we have these conversations because often what the software industry or the workplace surveillance software industry will say, well, that just means that we have to get better and better at these things. And the answer is, no, you're measuring the wrong things. What these are often excuses for poor management. If you're not talking to your people, if you don't check in with them regularly, then finding out how much of their day they spent on Excel versus Word doesn't tell you anything. Because what could be going on is they spent more of their day on Excel because they had a child homesick, but that was still working toward the productivity goals of the company. And if you're just dinging them for time on Excel versus time in Word, you're not getting the full picture of what's going on. And the person who's working so hard and trying to make all this happen with, say, a sick child at home is going to resent you for the email saying, why did you have this number in Excel versus this number? That's a moment in which good management would be to check in with the person, to talk to them.
The old-fashioned
the
way.
The old-fashioned way, the way in which, but see, that takes time. That takes energy. That takes a level of calling for a manager to do management in a way that respects their people, that understands what's happening with each individual person. It takes more time than just sitting there on a dashboard and hiring and firing people with actually, frankly, often discriminatory results. But we're asking for that other level of better management, not this surveillance as a crutch and all its the perversity that it often creates in the workforce and the experience.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. We are talking about workplace surveillance, the rise of workplace surveillance technologies with J.S. Nelson, again, visiting researcher at the Harvard Law School Program on Negotiation. And we got some comments here. Let me just make sure that you can join our conversation. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at @whyyradiotimes, and you can always call That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Kate says, I can't believe there are no laws about this. People should be paid to achieve a certain result, and that should be the measure. I mean, there are some... I mean, it sounds like you were saying earlier that if you work at a place where there is surveillance, and it sounds like, if not most, certainly many places there is surveillance, that you have, there has to be a sign somewhere or something in the manual, or you're saying no.
Well, actually, so it's ironic, but most employers know that they are on better legal ground if they do announce someplace that they are monitoring people.
Right.
But it's fascinating. We have some older statistics. Even in 2019, so these are pre-pandemic statistics, less than a third of CEOs who admit that they collect extensive data on their workforces personally felt that their companies use the data responsibly, right? So there's a lot of guilty conscience there. And then even when businesses know that worker consent essentially waives management's liability for surveillance, 56% of business leaders admitted that their companies don't ask workers for their consent.
Hmm.
So there's a lot going on here where people don't necessarily know what's happening. And it's fascinating because in 2022 numbers, there was a recent morning consult poll of tech workers where 75% of them would be surprised to find out that they're being surveilled or monitored. We can just presume that you are, and these are tech workers. So, and also, you know, that same survey had some other interesting pieces that are really important for managers to hear, which is that 56% of tech workers said they would resign if their employer found out that their employer was recording audio or video through their computers. 51% said they would quit in response to productivity monitoring face recognition software. And just under half said they would quit in response to keystroke monitoring or screenshots of their computer. Mm-hmm. And we presume this is pervasive. So there's clearly a disconnect, and it makes workers very unhappy. And like I said, these are often your star employees. These are often your star workers, the people who you need most. And remember, at the end of the day, most businesses, their major asset is their people, is their brains, is the knowledge work that those people are doing. And if you're going to send this message to your people that they're not trusted, that they're not respected, then why are they going to give you their best ideas?
Right.
Why are they going to sit there in the shower and come up with the innovation that you want them to have? Right. And then give it to you.
You mentioned the word consent. Do workers, can they give, I mean, if there is surveillance, do they have the right to give or not give consent? I mean, is that a part of the contract in a sense?
Well, so it's a fascinating idea because how meaningful is the consent?
Sure.
Right? I mean, this is not necessarily a bargain for exchange. It's not like you're sitting there going through the handbook and saying, strike that line, right, with you.
It doesn't work that way.
And not only that, but there's it's really interesting because a lot of the privacy law work on consent has been done in the commercial context where you can say, okay, well, I can click this box and give you my data and consent to giving my data because I want this product. That's not the way it works when you have a long-term relationship with an employer because – you know, all of a sudden the power differential is vastly different. You have a mortgage, you have, you know, kids, you have all these other pieces. You're not really in a position to negotiate these pieces. And frankly, if you are, we see star performers say, take it or leave it, I'm leaving it, right? Hmm. So when you do have expressions of, you know, negotiation in that, people are saying no. It's just, who has power to do that and when? And how do you see that manifest, right? It's not necessarily in a conversation ahead of time because this is not necessarily what so many people are thinking about. They're thinking about, you know, when am I getting paid and, you know, how many weeks of vacation and, you know, all the other benefits. But this is definitely a part of that workplace relationship that is a major turnoff.
Sure.
For many people.
Here's an email from Paul. I can tell you that at one job, I was shown a screen capture of me shopping on eBay when I was on work time. I can't tell you what the job was. I've had a number, but it absolutely does happen. But let me pick up on something which sort of relates to the fact that I think offline, at home, in our private lives, we've gotten kind of used to giving away information on ourselves. I think if you shop online, which most people do, then all of a sudden you find you're being shown products that they think you might be interested in, that we give this stuff away all the time without thinking about it. And maybe when it comes to work, we just expect that we're going to be monitored. I know I do.
Well, people should expect that they're being monitored, but 75% of even tech workers are surprised, would be surprised and upset.
Well, maybe they shouldn't be, though.
Yeah, so maybe they shouldn't be. But then the issue becomes, as we start doing this research and we start asking people, well, if we're going to put a monetary value on your data and you get a chance to decide what it's worth, people are putting actually a pretty high value on it. And you're seeing things like the GDPR regime in Europe start to say, you know what? This is actually people's – whose data is it, right? At the end of the day, is it yours? Is it somebody else's? How? And then, you know, there's a regime for dealing with data and data privacy in Europe, and we're getting some benefits of that because it's too hard to, you know, program, which, you know, for the United States versus Europe. So we're seeing screen pop-ups that say, you know, do you accept these cookies and those other things. So we're getting some spillover. But it is fascinating because in the United States, you do have to think about these questions of, okay, there's an enormous amount of medical information, for example, that is collected. Say when you wear a Fitbit for a health program for your employer, right?
Sure.
For women, that can get your fertility cycle. It can, you know, it can determine if you're having, you can have sex and who you had sex with because of the location, you know, there's an amazing amount of information that's getting collected. Now, what if that information is then resold by the employer later on, right? It's voluntarily given to the employer, so you've given up your interest in the health privacy aspect of it, right? That could track you for the rest of your life. And you're not even thinking about that at the time. You're thinking, oh, you know, I get $5 off a month at a gym membership. You know, there are all these pieces of it where we're not thinking it through. And it has all these repercussions that we may not consider. And they're really serious.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Again, talking about the rise of workplace surveillance technologies, how it works, what it means, what it says about the relationships between employers and employees, and J.S. Nelson, our guest. And again, email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Tell us what you think. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with J.S. Nelson. Again, she's visiting researcher at the Harvard Law School Program on Negotiation, co-authored a book called Business Ethics, What Everyone Needs to Know. And she's been writing a book on worker surveillance. And that's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. If there is more transparency, and if instead of buried in the worker handbook, you know, it starts on page one and says, we are surveilling you in these particular kinds of ways. If there were just more transparency about these behind the scenes technologies, would that help this relationship between the worker and the employee?
Employer, yes and no. Other? Yeah. So we, you know, just mentioning earlier, we don't always use the we're using the shorthand employee and employer, but we're talking about workers and managers because right. There are so many different methods of, you know, employment and non-employment, independent contractors, gig workers, you know, so many other things. So as to your question, transparency, yes and no in some ways. So the big arguments on the employer's side, and we'll just use that as shorthand, are control. Right? I want to know what people are doing. I want to increase productivity. And then sometimes you get arguments about liability, right? Like if there's insider trading, there is a big many of the big banks are actually now paying a huge fine because they were the employees were using text apps and some other things inappropriately. So you get pressures from those three pieces: the control, the productivity, and the liability. We've talked about control and how that seems to have a massive backlash.
Sure.
The productivity argument is really interesting because it also has a massive backlash. If the issue is, okay, I want to know who needs more help on Excel. Let's just pick an example. Well, the data, the studies seem to show that only the most junior employees seemed to be helped by this surveillance at all. And frankly, they should be in training programs anyway. So that's not a surprise. By the time you get to other levels of employees, it's really more for the employee to know that they need help with Excel or they're a little slow or something like that. The issue is when this goes to the manager, it's almost always used against the employee in some way that then the employee has to justify, well, I used Excel that day because of this other issue. And so we're seeing people fired on that basis. And what it's doing is actually disincentivizing your workforce. So the big question on the productivity point is, okay, if it's really for the workers to become more productive, then give this information to the workers. Why, you know, the managers, if you were looking for results in terms of what, you know, you're asking your people to do, the results are not be faster on Excel. The results are get this product out, right? So by focusing on be faster on Excel, you're actually hurting the get the product out part of it. And also, I want to say that this is interesting, too, because as we're having this conversation, you're talking about the blurring of the lines between, you know, work and home. Well, what's been fascinating about this is almost always this is going in the employer's favor, right? So you're working, you know, you may be doing work for your employer at 11 o'clock at night, but you're very seldom actually, you know, communicating about, you know, your mortgage or something, or your healthcare or something that is not for the employer during the day. So this creep of these lines continue to be for the employer's benefit and very seldom go in the other direction for the employee.
Can it be used? And I'm thinking about, let's say there are two employees, one of them really productive, working really hard, and one of them, I'm just using a really obvious example, one of them really slacking off. I mean, clearly not doing their job. Can this technology be used to get some more fairness in here so that the person who's working really hard and doing what they are expected to do gets rewarded and the person, frankly, who's slacking off gets tossed or gets reprimanded or gets something?
Well, that was the ideal and the hope in the beginning, but that's not the way it's being used, right? This is almost always being used against employees. And if you're trying to measure productivity, then you need to think about what you're measuring. This goes back to, is productivity making everybody faster on Excel, or is productivity actually doing the things for your company? And by focusing on these little metrics, you know, how often somebody's moving their mouse, how often they're, you know, slacking each other, you're actually detracting from the productivity of your workforce. And that, you know, and people are quitting their jobs because you're creating all this busy work for them, which actually, you know, there are really compelling interviews, and I think this was the New York Times piece that you know, chaplains who were doing hospice services, I mean, their job is to console the dying.
And they were being tracked.
And they were being tracked. And it was taking away from their ability to actually do their job because, you know, they didn't want to be doing mouse clicks. They needed to actually be talking to families and patients, you know, going through these major life events. And so what you're doing is you're actually hurting the quality of the work. You're hurting your productivity. And you're driving the people who care most about the mission out. If you really are a chaplain who cares about, you know, the moment of hospice and dying, they'll go work someplace else.
What
this
a mouse
is ridiculous.
Clicks have to
what
do about
mouse
that.
Clicks? Yeah, they'll yeah. just be. They'll be. That's a message to get anybody who's actually committed to your mission and committed to what you're, you know, the beautiful parts of what your company's doing. Drive them away instantly.
Here's a bunch of questions. One from Carrie: is there a way to protect yourself? Software you can download to block these programs, or would that be against the company's policies?
Typically, it's against the company's policies. And also, they have a right, broadly construed, to put this on any kind of device that you're using for work. So the best advice is to use separate devices. You know, have a computer at home that you use for your personal bank account and your personal correspondence and your personal whatever, you know, your mortgage, your issues. And do not hook that to your employer's network. Do not put your employer's email system on it. Don't put any piece of your employer's network on that. Don't, you know, hook it up to their Wi-Fi or anything else.
So even if you have separate sites on the same computer, don't mix and match?
No. So the old advice was that we would tell you to use different browsers for different things. So use Firefox for one thing. And now there's just because the whole device can have this monitoring software on it, that's not going to work very well. I mean, it'll keep Google from collecting all your information, but then, you know, the other browsers have it. And it doesn't work vis-a-vis your employer. So I would say just keep completely separate devices. Also, if you're working from home and you're thinking about what gets captured through screenshots, but also through your webcam and your microphone, think about working in a place away from the rest of your family. You know, I realize that people have the layouts of the places that they live, and it is what it is. But if you could get someplace that's sort of more separate from where your kids are or your spouse is or these other things, then it's less likely that stuff will get picked up. And be conscious of what that device can see and hear. So, you know, there's been a lot of discussion of the Pegasus software and some of the other spy software that's been on journalists' phones, but also on politicians' phones. There's a lot of in Greece, it turned out that the opposition politician, his iPhone had been tracking him and recording all his conversations and all the rest of it. And so there's a you know, just remember that anything you do around a device where, you know, the microphone could be turned on, the camera can be turned on, these other things can be tracked, you can presume that it's being collected.
And that's separate from work. I mean, that's just sort of...
I'm not sure that everybody should be concerned about, you know, being an opposition politician.
No, I understand
that. But I'm saying that, like, you know, if you're using a work device... that employer has put that software on there, and anything going through that device is, they don't know whether it's work or not work. So it's up to you to separate those things.
Here's a question from Diana. What if an employee is using their own computer to do work? Is the employer allowed to monitor on a personal laptop?
Yes, keep them separate. Keep them
separate. Literally two separate
as
devices.
As much as you can, keep them separate. Two different devices. Don't go on your employer's network, all the rest of that. As much as you can. If this is important to you, then think about that.
Here's a question from Luann. I read about new legislation about privacy and your data that Congress is working to pass. Does it have anything to do with privacy expectations at work? I mean, has this become a national or a federal issue?
I hope so. I mean, we haven't, you know, recently we've seen, you know, some action from Congress. That's really exciting. But a lot of this has been stalled for an awfully long time. And you've got to remember that businesses don't necessarily want the situation to change.
Because they want to know, right?
They want to know. And then there's an enormous compliance industry that is making a lot of money off of this software and selling versions of this software and, you know, creating permutations of it that, you know, they then, you know, market as yet more control, you know, supposedly productivity and, you know, issues with liability. So you have this cycle that this big machine that's gearing up on the other side. And it really has got to be a conversation where people who work, you know, need to think about whether they want this to be part of the workplace, whether they want this to be part of the understood contract with their employer. And right now, it is. And if we don't like it, yes, we need to change it.
Well, I was thinking about Amazon, you know, famously or perhaps infamously tracking their workers, tracking their drivers, you know, every move, any time that they're not on task. I forget what the phrase is. But I was also reading that with more unions coming in, some of those issues are, if not going away, at least being more transparent or more benign, you know, than they have been in the past.
Well, and there's a lot of concern that a lot of this tracking is actually to prevent union activity. which would be illegal, but it's absolutely happening. So we do know, for example, and a lot of, and it's so interesting because a lot of times this technology comes in the disguise of one thing and it becomes something else. So for example, the Bluetooth monitoring that was supposedly going to come in where everybody had it on their cell phone and they could know that they were a certain distance away from somebody else for COVID surveillance stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's used to track people's social networks so that they know who you've been talking to on the factory floor, or who in the office you just, you know, you have connections with. And if there's a movement for unionization, then you know where the social networks are. You know who people are talking to. You know, some of this natural language processing that's being done of emails, as we said, you can just presume that the emails are being read, but they're often being read by computer. Yeah. And what are those computers looking for? Sometimes they're looking for how well your language matches that of the rest of your team, which is a fascinating thing because it's put forward in the idea of, well, we can find out whether somebody's, you know, part, you know, absorbing the workplace culture and becoming one of us. But it also is a way to drum out whistleblowers, because a whistleblower is often someone who's looking at an issue and saying, you know, there's an ethical dimension here that we need to discuss.
I mean, literally using words like that, that could flag.
They could flag it and fire people. Exactly. Which is totally legal, but it completely happens. And because of all this electronic surveillance, you don't know whether you're being fired because of that, the unionization of, you know, because they found out that you're pregnant, or that, you know, you mentioned that your uncle has prostate cancer and all of a sudden, you know, you're let go because they heard cancer in the company. There's very little ability to understand what's happening here from the employee side, and certainly to appeal or discuss it.
I don't see, though, how we turn back the clock on this stuff. I mean, it seems I hear exactly what you're saying. Read a lot in preparation for the show. There are lots of companies making lots of money on this surveillance software, this surveillance technology. I don't see how we shut the door on this. Or if not shut the door, at least shrink it down so that it is not so intrusive.
Well, so this is a huge question for us. We often just run with technology and then we don't think about the consequences later. We're certainly seeing that in the social media discussion where we're finding out that it really has implications for mental health and, you know, especially for teenagers and all these other issues. But I will say, you know, just because we have cars on the road doesn't mean that we haven't been able to improve them and put in seatbelts and, you know, speed limits. And there are ways to actually, you know, nobody's talking about going back to the Stone Age. We have the technology. The issue is how and when should we use it? And we need to be way more thoughtful about that and realize that it can have repercussions that we're not aware of. Right. And we need to make conscious choices about this is how we're going to use the technology and this is how we're not, because these are going to be the boundaries of our experience. We expect cars to stay on the road. You know, they don't jump and go everywhere. Right. We've created a system where, you know, there are rules to how you drive a car and where that car goes. And there are places where you just can't plow a car through the middle of the house.
We
need to set up norms. We need to set up what the expectations are going to be. And if this is not working for us, then let's have that conversation and put those in place.
About 30 seconds. I mean, is Europe doing a better job than the United States?
A vastly better job, but they haven't completely solved it. So there's a lot of discussion here. And actually, the European regulators are leading the way on this and so many other issues. We just seem paralyzed in this country.
Wow. Well, we have to leave it there. J.S. Nelson, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And again, she is visiting researcher at the Harvard Law School Program on Negotiation, co-authored a book titled Business Ethics, What Everyone Needs to Know. And she's currently writing a book on worker surveillance, obviously our topic for today's Radio Times. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs. And you can also, and always, download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.